Welcome to High Latitude Healthy. I'm your host, Dr. Eileen Karpfinger. If you live anywhere in the U.S. besides Hawaii, we have cutting-edge science to share with you that can improve your health. Here's to living high latitude healthy. Hello, and welcome to High Latitude Healthy. I'm your host, Dr. Eileen Karpfinger. And I wanted to take a moment and have this episode be about the basics of what we're covering in this show, because High Latitude Healthy has so many experts and researchers coming on, and we want to make sure that as you're listening to things, you can grasp it. And so after a couple of these episodes of interviewing some experts, I wanted to just pop on here and just go over things. And before I do that, I want to just tell you a bit about how I got here and why we're going into this subject anyway. So again, my name is Dr. Eileen Karpfinger. I'm a chiropractor here in Viroqua. And I had studied nutrition and, sports medicine and things like that over the years. And when I got sick, I wasn't able to get myself well with all of the tricks that I had and all of the tricks of my best practitioners. And after many, many years of, it was three actually, of really trying to fix issues that were just getting worse and worse, it was quantum biology that got me out of it. And quantum sounds so woo-woo, so I want to be able to go over this with you. And then just let me start out with, though, what does high latitude healthy mean, and why are we studying and why are we talking about high latitude at all? So we in the southwest corner of Wisconsin are definitely at the high latitudes. Latitude is the further away from the equator that you go, the higher the latitude is. So at the equator at zero, and we're at the 43rd latitude north. And I happen to have a place up on Lake Superior at the tippity tip of Wisconsin, and I know that that place in Herbster is at the 46th latitude. And just to make something interesting here, just note that Mongolia, which we all know about, Mongolia is this really cold place, right? Guess what latitude it is? It's the 46th latitude. They're at the exact same latitude that we are. So what's interesting is that latitude, where we are on the planet pertaining to latitude, is something that is really important. You can imagine that a coconut tree at the equator is going to grow just fine, but you put a coconut tree up here in one of our yards and we're going to have a heck of a time letting that grow, right? The same thing's true for us. We have different strategies in our DNA from the evolutionary, from all of our ancestors that got us to a point where we can survive and perhaps thrive in this way, in this area. So let's start there. And I wanted to start out with how I got here. So prior to moving to Viroqua, 5 years ago, I was in Oakland, California, which is a little bit lower latitude, but it was really sunny and it mostly had two seasons. And it was sunny enough and I could be there and I had all of my strategies to live there nicely. And I ran every day and I did my yoga and I ate nice fresh fruits and vegetables and mostly a plant-based diet. And I was healthy and I slept well and I had plenty of energy. And about the beginning of COVID, I moved here with my family, and I basically continued living my life like I was in California for a good 2 years. And about a year into that, and what that looked like was basically in October or November, I moved inside, and I kept eating the way I did in California, which is like fresh fruits and vegetables and mostly plant-based stuff, and it was soups, though. There were some soups involved. And eventually, I started getting sick. I was weaker and I couldn't sleep well. And I started getting pain in a lot of my body, mostly my feet. My feet were agonizingly painful. And nothing was working. So I was thinking, oh, my thyroid's out. Oh, my cortisol levels are high, which they were, and especially in California, and they weren't as much here. And I started feeling as though I had to figure out something that was working better for me. And little by little, I tried everything, and nothing was working. And then eventually I came upon Dr. Jack Cruz. So Dr. Jack is a neurosurgeon from New York, and he had some health issues himself, and he figured out for himself that circadian function was a big part of what we're missing in our modern lives. And he started talking about light as an issue and talking about getting up at the sun and cold exposure and different things with red light and things like that. And these are things I'd been trying, but I never put them together into a theory. And the theory that he was working with was that circadian function is the foundation. And so when that came to me, I was so thankful that there was something that all these things were helping me little by little, but there wasn't the science behind it to make sense of it. And Dr. Cruz was really good at bringing it all together. So when I found him, I found, you know, he mentions all these researchers and scientists in the past, and I started looking at their information, and all of it kind of came together. And then I had found for myself what this invisible vitality that I was missing is. So I could make sense of why cold exposure was helpful, and I could make sense of why sleep in darkness was so therapeutic. And it was all about the mitochondria and the health of our relationship between our bodies and the sun and pure darkness at night and water. So everything that you're going to be getting in this show has something to do with the vitality that seems to be missing in our science, you know, except for the newest of science. It seems to be missing because we don't address the water in our bodies as something that's an essential function. And so I want us to dive a little bit deeper into what mitochondrial health is, because when I introduce, you know, this guy who makes a really great cold plunge, or we talk to somebody who knows everything about light, and or we talk to somebody who knows about intermittent fasting or seasonal diets, it's still all about mitochondrial health. It's still all about our relationship to water and the sun. So I started by getting my light environment optimized when Dr. Jack Cruz talked about that. And I understood how optimizing exclusion zone water in the body and how it operates is the most important thing. So I want to explain to you some of these things, okay? So number one, our bodies are designed to take signaling of light and temperature as a way to know what to do. Circadian rhythm is what drives all of our cellular work. So if we wake up with the sun in the morning, and if we, you know, acknowledge the sunset at night, and we go to bed after that and it's dark, you would be surprised at how fast your body starts to regulate. And that's just because you're working with where you are. You're working with getting up in the morning when the sun's up and going to bed when the sun's down, which in the winter is a ridiculously short amount of time. But in the winter, we could use a little bit more sleep, right? And a little more darkness. So where you live and what time of year it is telling your cells how to perform. And number two, our bodies run on electricity. The electrical flow from a broader scale than just the nervous system. As a chiropractor, I'm very familiar with the flow of from the brain to the rest of the body and from the body to the brain and all over. But this is more inclusive. So the electron flow from the mitochondria, from inside our cells, is our main energy source. So how do electrons flow and how do we produce energy? So we're all familiar with biochemistry. We know how to eat right and we take our vitamins. And for the most part, we understand that food is our fuel, right? That's what we've been taught. But what animates the biochemistry and what is the reaction of the cell when nutrients come in? And this is the invisible energy that I'm talking about, that when that is messed up is when we can't really digest our food or whatever we're eating isn't nourishing us any further. Our skin is getting drier and drier or things like that. And it's about the way our body uses the energy. It all comes down to the energy produced, and the most basic breakdown is bioelectrical. Quantum biology, it was termed by two guys, Jamil Khalili, he's a physicist, and a biologist named John McFadden. And they teamed up to study bird migration, and they were the first to prove that quantum biological effects were happening in living systems. Before that, the scientific work of quantum biology was always done in a cold, dry laboratory, super controlled settings. And this bird study said that electron and proton tunneling existed in birds. And so let's go over that a little bit. And then since then, quantum biology has exploded. So Jack Cruz has said that all technology is mimicking what we are already doing in our body. And what's fascinating is that the newest quantum biology science is showing that water is the foundation of this electron tunneling or electron exchange. So here's what gets really interesting. Our feet walking on the earth are getting a constant flow 24 hours a day of electrons coming at us. If we were barefoot all the time, we would, or sleeping on the ground 24 hours a day, we would be getting electrons that would be fueling our bodies. And what's interesting is that if you look at what's happening with water in this regard, is that water is the semiconductor. It is the thing that is capturing the sun, is capturing the grounding, and it's making that into energy for our bodies. And I'll go deeper into that, but we are essentially upright antennas, water antennas, that are receiving electrons from the sun and electrons from the ground. And if we were doing just that alone, if we were outside as the animal that we are as humans, we could be receiving about 90% of our energy directly from the earth and directly from the sun. And as upright mammals, we are walking water antennas, right? And our bodies are mostly water. And there is water in our blood, our lymphatic system, and our cerebral spinal fluid that is fluid and not particularly organized. The water we drink helps make these fluids. But the water in our cells and our extracellular matrix is made entirely by the mitochondria. And it is this water made by our mitochondria in the cells that truly determines our vitality. This is what I'm telling you, people. This is exactly what the show is about, is this water that the mitochondria makes. And so there are four steps in the electron transport chain, if you remember this from your biology days. And the fourth step is making intracellular water. The final step of the electron transport chain is for the mitochondria is to make water out of our fuel. Just to let you know, if you do anything like ketosis, carbohydrates make some easy water. It's called exclusion zone water. But fat makes four times the water than carbohydrates. And so you wonder why some of these things make sense. Why does eating a ketosis diet, a ketogenic diet, help? And it's because it's making more exclusion zone water. So I was getting ahead of myself a little here. So this water that's in that the mitochondria is making is called easy water, exclusion zone water. And Dr. Gerald Pollack wrote a book called The Fourth Phase of Water, and it's a great book. I suggest you get that book and look through it. And in Dr. Pollack's lab, he and his team found the water in living entities, in the cells and outside of the cells, act very differently than the water we drink and we swim in, okay? So if you're looking at a glass of water and you think that our mitochondria is making some of that water, it's very different water. So specifically, easy water structures very specifically to form a hexagonal lattice where the oxygen are on the outside and the hydrogen form on the inside on the bonds in the middle. And if you picture something like a six-sided snowflake, it's like that. And then picture a sheet of that, because on a biological surface, you're going to see this gel of easy water in sheets, in hexagonal little segments. And so these sheets are the thing that are making our energy spread through the rest of our body. This easy water organizes and has a negative charge. And that negative charge is going to pair with the protons being on a whole nother part of that, and the protons are going to be the positive charge. And this is exactly how a battery is made, right? The positive and negative of a battery is what can light a light bulb. And this easy water has that same capacity. And that is our energy that we're using throughout the whole body. So easy water is slippery and gel-like, and it is found on all biological hydrophilic water-loving surfaces. And that's pretty much every surface inside the body. All of our cells, all of our cell membranes, all organelles, all proteins in the extracellular matrix. If you've ever held a fish and that slimy, slippery film, that's easy water too, because fish have water on the outside of them. They have easy water, exclusion zone water on the outside. So easy water is from the mitochondria, and it performs as a semiconductor for light. So when UV light from the sun and infrared light come from the sun and hit the cell, because it penetrates the body, the light is absorbed by the easy water to make the vital electron exchange. And this is what fuels the cell. Now, if you've got that concept that easy water is what makes our bodies function, and that is the true currency of the body as opposed to the ATP, which we've all learned is the fuel of the body, the term that comes up that explains the health of this is called redox potential. And redox means oxidation reduction. And it's describing the exchange of electrons between one atom and another. If you remember in biochemistry and the atom and the electron rings and how these electrons would leave to join another atom, this is that science, okay? And redox potential is the concept of recognizing the swifter and more efficiently we can exchange electrons, the better our health outcomes are. So this is that invisible vitality that I was speaking of earlier. If you simply do not have the oomph in your cells to create energy, you definitely do not have the oomph for general detox and for cell growth in the body. So why is redox potential so important? Jack Cruz uses the term redox before detox. And what we're saying there, and if I had to unpack that one for a good long while before I was able to understand it. But what I realized is that for decades, even well before I was a chiropractor, I was helping people detox. And I probably had about a 70 or 80% success rate. And I feel like the people that weren't able to detox well, they always had some kind of chi or energy issue that I couldn't do anything about. So their detox would fall flat, or their detox might even get them sick. And so what's important is to acknowledge that this invisible science of your body having a good enough electrical charge is important before you do something like detox. And I think this should really come home to some of us that are listening right now, because detox sounds like it's the first thing we have to do whenever we get into trouble. We have to detox, or we have to strengthen stuff, you know, strengthen our muscles, or sleep better, or any of the things. And those things are going to be off if your electrical charge is off. So soon here, what I'm going to talk to you about is what it is that will encourage your redox potential to be better and better. So how do I know if my redox potential is not at its best? If you have any of the symptoms, the following symptoms, your redox potential can for sure improve. Number one is poor sleep. If my sleep is not great, that is the number one sign that I look for concerning redox potential. So if you're not sleeping well, that is a very strong indication that you could improve your redox potential. And number two, libido and erectile function weakness. So any sexual function, if that's off, your redox potential can improve. Number three, cataracts in your eyes. That is a real reason that your redox potential is off. Number four, skin, hair, and nails are less vital. So if you don't have as much skin, hair, and nails, that would even include dental work too. Number five is heart issues of all kinds. Number six, neurological conditions, including Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and MS. Number seven, LDL cholesterol is lower than 200. When your redox potential is high, DHA, which is your LDL, is also high, and cholesterol becomes sulfated, and this makes it a very healing protein. Number eight, hormones are imbalanced, particularly vitamin D, DHEA, estrogens, progestins, and androgens. Number nine, heart rate variability and pulse oximetry. The more varied and the faster your recovery, the better your redox potential. So this is a big one. Like as most people, as we get more and more sedentary, are allowing themselves to be in a very same pulse situation. You're not running up the stairs and then breathing hard for a couple seconds and then recovering, right? That is the sign of a good mitochondrial function. And number 10, frequent illnesses. So you're getting a lot of colds, you're catching a lot of illnesses, your wounds aren't recovering well. These are all redox potential issues. And then, so to reiterate here, we are electrical beings with the task of making liquid crystal water in our mitochondria that is magically different than tap water. This deuterium depleted water that we make, I'll tell you more about it later, is the dielectric constant that has high potential to refract light in water, light being the energy and the information. Because of the structure of the water we make, we hold the energy we are receiving from the sun and the earth. This is our vitality. This water is our vitality. And this is where I'd like to connect the dots on a number of therapies that are helpful and why they're all in the same category of improved mitochondrial function. And before I go any further, besides telling you that we are on WDRT in Viroqua, 91.9, I wanted to let you know that I'm giving you a disclaimer here that any and all the suggestions that I make here on forward are merely for your entertainment and that I am not here prescribing treatment or of any sort. You are to consult with your healthcare team about any and all of the information you hear, and that's after this disclaimer. So how does one improve redox potential? Remember, redox potential is the measurement, if there were any, of how swiftly and efficiently we exchange electrons. So having lots of electrons around would be a great start, right? Well, hydrogen, our first element on the periodic table, is the most generous donor of electrons. And water is two hydrogens and one oxygen. So the splitting of water is a great source of electrons. But let's start with the easiest of electron donors, okay? So the sun and the earth are constant givers of electrons. The sun, when it's shining, and the earth 24 hours a day, is giving us electrons constantly. So if you can be out in the sun on a sunny day, you're getting electrons. And the same is true even on a cloudy day or even if it's raining, you are still getting, believe it or not, some electrons from the sun. And you're getting infrared from the sun at all hours of daylight. And then, and are there areas on the planet where there is more sun or more grounding potential from the Earth? Yes, indeed. So technically, the Earth gets the same amount of sun all over all over year round. But on the equator, we have 12 hours of sunlight and 12 hours of darkness every day throughout the year. Wouldn't that be nice? And at high latitudes, like where we are, we have days with little to no sunlight in the winter. And in the summer, we have days that are almost all sunlight, right? So we make up in the summer for the sunlight that we're missing in the winter. But in the end, we're getting the same amount of sun as the people at the equator. It's just not as radiant. Okay, so it's easier to get the sun radiance when you are closer to the equator, for sure. And grounding? Grounding with the Earth is more intense in certain areas of the Earth, too. The strongest magnetic pull from the Earth is near volcanoes, or where there were volcanoes, especially if they were somewhat active. And volcanoes with seashore is the most grounding one can get. So walking with your feet in the sand at the edge of the water, making sure you're in the water, is the most grounding electrons we can get. And then another way of getting electrons is through forest bathing. We're getting infrared, actually, from forest bathing. Did you know that green leaves reflect off infrared from the sun? When you're in a forest or under a tree, you are in a tunnel of infrared light. Infrared is a very big wavelength, and it penetrates deep into our bodies. It's very healing. Infrared light is shown to increase our easy water, remember that exclusion zone water, dramatically. Those sheets of hexagonally structured hydrogen get thicker and thicker. Sun, by reflecting, by its reflection, sitting under a tree, or in all aspects of sunlight, is giving you infrared light. And then there's something called the albedo effect, or albedo refers to reflectivity of a surface. So if there's a dark surface, you have low to no albedo effect because it absorbs the infrared light. Think blacktop in the summer. Remember how hot that is? It's literally absorbing the infrared light of the sun. And then surfaces like snow have maximum albedo effect. And it's why snow remains cold while reflecting infrared light back into the atmosphere. We receive infrared light from snow too, just because of the glow. Not snow itself, but the reflection of sunlight is actually giving you infrared. So hugging a tree, pulling weeds, walking barefoot on the ground, swimming in the creek, these are all ways of grounding, which means we are getting a constant flow of electrons for our body's electrical flow. Now I want to share something about mitochondria and its ability to create light. Our mitochondria, it actually creates biophotons. It creates light. It's a very small amount of infrared and UV light that it produces. And to start out with, our genetics tell us a lot about our ability to create light directly. And our mitochondrial DNA will tell us if we have coupled or uncoupled mitochondrial haplotypes. And a coupled mitochondrial haplotype is someone whose ancestors have stayed close to the equator forever. And uncoupled haplotypes are generations of people who have moved either way north or way south over generations. And coupled haplotypes have very efficient mitochondria for producing energy. These people can harness the sun's energy better than anyone else on the planet. Ever wonder why Nairobian Kenyans are always the fastest marathon runners? They are just giant batteries for sunlight. And the uncoupled haplotype are less efficient and have varying ways of making energy. Now, this is most of us, actually, especially up in these parts, especially if you have lighter skin and lighter hair and lighter eyes, okay? So we all benefit from getting into the sun. We receive energy directly from the UV and infrared light from the sun and all of the sun's rays. But coupled haplotypes have to have sun for energy, and they don't have other strategies for making UV and infrared light. Uncoupled haplotypes have cold as another energy source. So as you can understand, we've evolved to be able to utilize cold as one of our ways of making our own sunlight. Our mitochondria have evolved to make biophotons from cold. So we make light from getting in cold exposure. So if you're cold plunging or taking cold showers, or if you're simply out in the cold weather, our mitochondria are making their own sun energy in the cold. So all winter, we have cold to help us when we don't have enough sun to help us. Melanin is important to include here too. So melanin is the pigment in our eyes, our hair, and our skin. And it's how we receive the light from the sun. The darker our eyes, hair, and skin, the more melanin we have and the more sun we need. Lighter eyes, lighter hair, and lighter skin means we have a smaller battery pack to fill from the sun. And it's important for all of us with light or dark skin to build up our solar callus. And we need to allow our skin and our eyes to be in the sun and build a tan. I know what that sounds like to somebody who's fair-skinned with freckles, that you think you burn and burn and burn and you don't get any benefit from being in the sun. But each of us benefits from being in the sun. And if we have fairer skin, you probably want to do that earlier in the day, not in the middle of the day. So the cell in the intracellular water that's in our skin cells, towards the surface, it's easy form. And we know that when sunlight, specifically UV light, strikes that easy water, it creates a plasma of free electrons, and it can go anywhere in the body because this water is interconnected. And some research is showing that when sunlight hits melanin, it splits a water molecule, and that hydrogen is separated, that's separated becomes molecular hydrogen, a full electron donor. So UV sunlight activating our melanin in total can supply your body with 90% of its energy. Food is so secondary. Our body will prioritize the use of light and the making of water as its energy source more than it will for food. So what's interesting is when light is emitted towards our skin and in our eyes, we create a nitric oxide effect that slows down the production of ATP. It literally channels our body to utilize light before it does food. And maybe some of us can remember that when it's a beautiful sunny day, we're not all that hungry. That can be the case. That should be the case, because when you're in the sun, your body's producing light that way, and utilizing light as its energy source. I'd like to take a moment and see the implications of animals in the natural world and how they are 90% taken care of just by existing on the planet. Bird feathers are loaded with melanin. Fur in animals is loaded with melanin. Think of a polar bear. Their hair is clear. And do you know what color their skin is? It's black. Their skin is black under that clear filament of their hair, of their fur, and they have deep melanin capacity. Think of the tiny birds we see in the sub-zero weather. They're sitting on a tree branch, which is grounding, by the way. When you're on a tree, or if you're hugging a tree, you're getting grounding energy. And they are exposed to the light of the sun, light in the sky all day, right? And how is it that these tiny birds can survive in our temperature of sub-zero weather? I still don't understand it, but I do know that they're getting infrared and they're getting UV light, which is providing them with an immense amount of energy. And by the way, infrared is not always warming. It can be neutral. So all day, every day, even on a cloudy day, even when it's raining, we are getting infrared light from the sun. Even in the littlest amount, we're getting some from the sun. And if you're super pale and think sun is dangerous, I encourage you to read more on sunlight as a healthy element and not just leave yourself out of the sun. And get out at dawn and early sunlight in the morning to get your exposure. And then here's one more thing. If you're sensitive to the sun, you're better off not wearing sunglasses and especially not wearing contact lenses, because The contact lenses that are made today are blocking out 100% of the UV light. And our eyes need to know that there's UV coming into them for our skin to produce the melanin to protect our skin. So I suggest wearing hats and wearing clothing to protect your skin and get in the shade when you're feeling hot, because you will get the indirect exposure to the sun, which is super healthy for you, not just sitting out there bare in the sun in the middle of the day if you're fair-skinned, okay? So where else do we get electrons for our bodies? We talked about cold exposure, but let's revisit that for a minute. Our bodies produce UV and infrared light in cold exposure. So I cold plunge outside every morning in the winter, and that's in the winter only because that's when I really need that, right? And the coldest I've ever cold plunged was minus 13 degrees Fahrenheit outside, and the water was 33 degrees. And I stayed in the water for 3 minutes. I had a hat on, and I keep my hands out of the water, which I don't know if that's a good idea or a bad idea when the water's 33 degrees and the air is minus 13. I don't know. I'm just trying to get through that 3 minutes. And I stay in that water for 3 minutes before I go back into the house, and I usually sit in front of my fire or my infrared light. Otherwise, each day I get out there, no matter what the temperature, and you know what? I haven't had a cold all winter long. All those colds going around, I haven't had one cold. Isn't that interesting? When sunlight strikes the skin, we have a metabolite of cholesterol in the skin, and the cholesterol is waiting to feel a strong wavelength of vitamin of UVB light to transform it into something else. So when that cholesterol receives intense enough UVB light, it transforms that cholesterol into pre-vitamin D3. D3 can photoconvert into many, many metabolites. Prolonged exposure of skin to sunlight not only increases melanin synthesis, but also causes cholesterol to be converted primarily into inert steroids. Inert just means something, we don't know what it does yet, but some of them are lumisterol, tachysterol, and cholecalciferol. Vitamin D3, as a supplement, cannot convert into the intricate substrates of the metabolites. It is vastly different from the vitamin D3 we make by the sun. And when studying vitamin D3 in supplementation, even when they're elevated, when there's an elevated D3 in the blood, raising it to what's supposed to be the therapeutic level, it does not translate into the same benefits of sunlight. You don't get the same cardiovascular benefits or cancer-preventing benefits or benefits of autoimmune conditions. It's simply not the same. What's found is that there are so many metabolites that are cancer preventative when vitamin D is generated from the sun. So what is measured in the blood when you test for vitamin D levels? We are measuring only one of the metabolites that vitamin D converts to, and the test is only measuring the vitamin D level in the blood. Remember, there is vitamin D in the cells, too. 32 grams per deciliter is a minimum, says your doctor, right? Sitting out in the sun, you can make 100 IU of vitamin D3 in 20 minutes. So your tests may have missed many of the other metabolites, and it for sure is missing all of the other D3 that's intracellular. And water-soluble D3 is never tested either. The vitamin D is a good source in breast milk, for example. And here's what's important for high latitude dwellers. In the winter, melanin is a hormone that is binding to the vitamin D receptor and vitamin A2. And this is what creates the healthy vitamin D effects we are looking for: anti-inflammatory, immune-supportive, anti-cancer. Why in the middle of winter do we need to keep our vitamin D stores up? If in the winter we have no UVB potency from those months that we talked about above, what is the evolutionary solution for living up here? Melatonin. Melatonin is the winter hormone, not vitamin D. And if your melatonin levels are low, it's likely due to artificial light after dark. When the sun goes down after 4 p.m., it's pretty hard not to switch on a light for another 4 to 6 hours before you go to bed. I get it. But that's the cost of living in a similar lifestyle in the winter than you do in the summer. Perhaps in the winter, we are designed to get more sleep and be in more darkness, living up here in the higher latitudes. All right, let's delve into some of the other ways you can encourage your mitochondria to work efficiently. One way is intermittent fasting. So intermittent fasting means having a period of time where you're not eating at all. You can be drinking water during that time, but no drinks with sugar, maybe some herbal tea or something like that. Some people like coffee, but a period of no eating at all, and then a period of feasting. And that feasting could be that you're fasting you're eating in a 3-hour window a day, which means you're fasting for 21 hours. You can have something called an OMAD, which is one meal a day fast. And that's basically you eat, maybe it's lunch or dinner, and then you wait until lunch or dinner the next day to eat. And that's a 24-hour fast. You can fast up to even 3 or 4 days at a time. And what's nice about that is that your body is getting its electrons working better while burning your own fat. Just to note that eating carbohydrates or fat, you're turning those into electricity too. You're turning those into water. And the mitochondria make 4 times the water from fat than they do carbohydrates. And so when you're fasting, you're going to be going into ketosis, which is fat burning, and it's very efficient for the body. So for colder climates, getting up with the sun and eating within 30 minutes of rising is a good thing. And also not eating after dark, if at all possible. And in the winter, that's after about 4 p.m., I think. So fasting is one really good way to make sure that you're utilizing your body's electrical energy. And another thing you can do to improve your mitochondria is called seasonal eating, and eating what grows in your area. So if you and I lived on the equator, we could eat pineapples and papayas and fish from the sea and avocados and all the things. There's a lot more carbohydrates down in the area where there's lots of sun, right? And in the summer here, there's a lot more carbohydrates too, because we can grow them, right? But in the winter here, seasonal eating in Southwest Wisconsin, the definition of seasonal eating in Wisconsin in the winter is grass-fed beef and grass-fed butter, or venison too. Those would be the staples around here. And it's not honestly my ideal diet. And so I think that's how I got myself in trouble when I was not doing so well, was I was eating similarly to how I'd eat in California, and that wasn't helping me. But if I had a real serious health issue again, I would for sure be considering eating more grass-fed meat and grass-fed butter in my diet. Okay, and now circadian function. Why might it be important to pay attention to when the sun goes up and when the sun goes down? Our bodies, and in particular our mitochondria, are sampling our environment always. So if you get up to see the sun and the glow of the reds and oranges of the sun, your eyes get the message and start to produce the melatonin needed to help you get sleepy at night. That's right. It's the first thing in the morning, the reds and the oranges of the sun are helping you make the mitochondria, make the melatonin that your body needs to be sleepy at night. So all day, out in the sun and taking breaks to be out in the sun, you tell your body what time of day it is and what time of year it is, right? Your body knows that it's the middle of February, or your body knows that it's the middle of July, just being out in the sun, right? And if you were in a position, a lot of us are noticing, we're pretty comfortable in our lives, right? Everything's 70 degrees. Our car can warm up and it's 70 degrees, and we're in our house and it's 70 degrees, and we just go from the house to the car and the car to the store, and we're barely out in the weather ever. And then in the summer, you can cool your house to 70 degrees too, right? If it's hot, you can cool it to 70 degrees. What you can know about circadian function is if you go to daylight savings, which is coming up in March, that is the turn of daylight savings to springing forward an hour changes our bodies so dramatically that it increases heart attacks. I think it's by some giant number, like 60%, when we change it to daylight savings. So we have, our bodies are so connected to the time of day that we're doing all the things that we're doing. And all day being in the sunlight like we are, we're actually helping our body know what time of day it is. Another interesting fact is right now in the world, the biggest increase of type 1 diabetes is in somewhere in India. I don't know where, but where all the call centers are in India, where they're getting on the phone with people around here. It's nighttime there and it's daytime here. So they're up at night with lights on, and they're probably in an air-conditioned place looking at a blue screen with blue lights over their bodies. And lo and behold, they're seeing more onset of type 1 diabetes, which is crazy. So in the morning when you wake up, there's a burst of cortisol as well that is your body has been building all night. And when you get up in the morning, it's what makes you catapult into awakeness is the cortisol. And I'm not going to go into that too much detail right now, but that also has to do with your circadian function. One more way we can activate our own body's biophotons is with exercise and movement, especially in the sun. So working out outside in the sun is far more beneficial for our health than working out inside, especially in poor lighting. So some other ways we can help our mitochondria, and these are the artificial ways that you can do it, are saunas, infrared lights, so lighting that you can put on your skin or you know, glowing on your face that is infrared. They also have UV lights that are like that as well. And then remember how hydrogen is an electron donor? You can actually drink hydrogen water, or you can breathe in molecular hydrogen or Brown's gas, which has molecular hydrogen in it. We can discuss in greater detail with some experts on this show about deuterium-depleted water or deuterium-depleted protocols. That's something I do all winter. And then using blue-blocking glasses, especially after dark, something that is helping your body balance the lighting in your home and the lighting on the screens from after dark. It's important for our bodies to not experience any blue at all, because the blue is making us wakeful and making it seem as though it's daylight. And then replacing lighting in our house to be incandescent, or I have some special lighting in my house. If you actually knew where I lived at night, you're going to see red light. Like I have like a Grateful Dead concert going on in my house. It's all red in there because that's the only lighting I'll have on at night, and candlelight and firelight. Because blue light affects so many things in the body, including our blood sugar levels and things like that. And then one other thing that's super, super important is pure darkness at night. Our eyes can see one photon of light, so the tiniest of light it can see from even a great distance. And so it's important for our bodies, for the receptors, our light receptors on our bodies and in our eyes, to be able to be reset by having total darkness for at least 4 hours every night. And that's very important. If we don't get that pure darkness, if you're sleeping in light, or if you're sleeping with a screen on, or even if you have one of those little LEDs on your smoke detector, or you're leaving a nightlight on, you're affecting your body's health from not having that pure darkness. Okay, so I just wanted you to know that these are kind of the basics of what we're going to be talking about in this show, High Latitude Healthy. This is the general big picture of what quantum biology and circadian health is. And it's not all piecemeal. It all makes sense that it's all for our body's electrical field to be working right, right? And if this felt like a lot all at once, I encourage you to listen to it again and again and maybe take notes if you want to. And remember, it's taken me 4 years to get this science down. So I'm just giving you the basics. And throughout this show, you're going to be hearing from experts on these subjects. We'll be talking to people that are experts in cold plunging and experts in Brown's gas or molecular hydrogen, and people who can help us with understanding the benefits of saunaing and deuterium depletion. These are all things we'll be talking about as we go forward. And I want you to understand that it's because of it being good for our health and not just a shot in the dark, but an actual specific health benefit. And then I want you to know also that stacking some of these protocols, there's a way to do it in better and better form. So one example is that it's always best to end on cold. If you're doing hot and then cold, it's always best to end on cold. And there's science behind that. And you wouldn't know that unless you started reading some of that science, or if you're going to get it from some of our experts here. So if you have a sauna with red light in it, realize that red light while you're cold plunging or soon after you're cold plunging is going to be a better thing too. So these are all little bits of things that you're going to get over time. And it's been really, it's been a lot to go through with you here today. I've been feeling like I wanted to make a basics episode for you all because I have guests coming on that are freaking brilliant. And I want to make sure that you've got some of these basics available to you. And the basics is that we are light beings that communicate with our environment through light and darkness, right? And all of that makes the key movement in our body. It tells us when we're making daytime hormones and nighttime hormones. It's telling us when is good to go to sleep and repair during our sleep. It's telling us when to be to consume or eat because we don't have enough sunlight or enough grounding. Or it's telling us we have fruit in our environment, so let's eat that fruit, versus in the winter we don't have any fruit growing, and so maybe this is the best time for us to fast or to eat meat and fats. So it's all of these cues that we're getting from nature that are our vitality and make us more and more connected to our world. I have one interesting thing to share with you. I heard the other day that it took 4 million years for our intestines to shrink by 4 inches. 4 million years. And the reality is we have been in artificial light, and now artificial, like really artificial blue light with screens and all that, plus EMF radiation, and going from 2D to 3D to 4D to 5D, 2G to 3G to 4G to 5G, and we keep picking that up with no regulations. And we're wondering why we have further and further anomalies happening in our lives with all of the fake environments that we're in. If we grew up wherever we were on the planet with leather on our feet or just barefoot, and we were in the sun or on the snow or wherever we were for as long as we were, and now we're indoors with the same heat in the winter, and then we're outside in the summer, but in the summer if it's too hot, we turn on the air conditioning, so we're at 70 degrees all the time. All of this is impacting our health in such a giant way that we have not, it's invisible to us. So I'm asking us as listeners to High Latitude Healthy to take into account that if you're choosing to be here and you want to be healthy, if this is your home and you want to be healthy, that you engage with your outdoor environment so that you allow your body to be healthier and healthier and get through without the same problems that people are having in this culture that we're in. Let's keep our eyes from cataracts. Let's keep our joints from having to be replaced. Let's keep ourselves away from metabolic syndrome and diabetes. Let's get out into the sun and to the cold and to have real darkness at night so that we have the ability to really be healthy individuals. And let's teach our kids to be outdoors all the time. I love the Kickapoo Nature School, that the kids are out there all the time, no matter what the weather. I think that builds a resilient kid. I think that's a good way for us to be modeling how to be healthy in this environment. Okay, I really appreciate you listening to this. And if you have any further questions, you're welcome to email me on the show. You're also welcome to listen to this again and again and again and get some more of the deep dives in this information. I'll try to chapter it out in the Spotify version. Let's stay high latitude healthy. Thanks, y'all. High Latitude Healthy and all the show notes can be found at wdrt.org and as well on Spotify, YouTube, and on social media on Facebook, Instagram, and X. Find us and follow us to keep up with our interviews. And if you'd like to email Dr. Eileen, email her at highlatitudehealthy@gmail.com. Here's to living high latitude healthy.